Live from the Regis Suites in Peoria, Arizona, this is Money Health, brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. I'm Dave Isaac, and the star of the show is Conrad Kagashal, Arrowhead Wealth Management. Conrad, how are you?
I'm great, Dave. Thanks for the great introduction. It's nice to be here at our radio show because I really enjoy this time. We get to talk about money health, and we interview guests from time to time. And we've had a couple of good guests already come on the show. I loved Mr. Goldwater that came on, Don.
He was great. The nephew of Barry and the son of Bob, the Goldwater family goes a long way in America,
yep.
Especially out here where streets are named after them.
Right. You get a street.
In Phoenix.
Yep, you get a street named after you. I was having a discussion with a client early this morning, and he was watching Wimbledon, and they were talking about he asked me if Serena was the best tennis player ever, if she won the most championships, and I didn't know, but I thought about it. I said, you know, how would that be to be the best in ever in a sport?
That, you know, there's very few that can be crowned the king. If you think about it, in football there's controversy, basketball there's controversy. I don't know if there's much controversy in hockey. I think Wayne Gretzky, well, there is. I mean, Bobby Orr is mentioned in those, you know, the elite status. But I don't know. Wayne Gretzky, with all the records he has set and still has, you know, it's hard to say he's not the best.
Yeah, and I think his brand of hockey, too, was because he was a beautiful player. You know,
he
wasn't going, you know, and knocking people's teeth out.
Not at all.
Yeah.
He was a pure,
graceful.
But pure talent. I mean, just the vision of Magic Johnson, for example, he could see and anticipate things throughout the whole ice. In fact,
right,
I think
right.
He saw the ice in slow motion.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely their gift. You know, I try and I coach my girls' soccer teams every year, and I try and tell them to go where the ball's going to be.
Exactly.
Not where it is.
Yeah.
And that's what Gretzky said was his gift, that he would go, he was going to be where the puck was going to be, not where it was.
Or he would pass it to where the player can get it, and he said 100. You never score on shots you never take. So
right,
basically.
Right.
So he's had a lot of quotes. Phenomenal, no question about it. As a player. Now you mentioned soccer, and of course this is not a soccer show. However, I think we should mention that the USA in the finals. Yes, I saw that game.
I watched every minute.
Wow, that was by far their best game of the World Cup this time. And, you know, Germany did sort of come back. In fact, you know, if they made that penalty kick, I forgot her name, that could have changed something.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the U.S. would have lost.
Yeah, but no, it could change momentum drastically.
Because Hope Solo went one way, the ball went the other way,
it
missed the net.
Yep, and it missed the net. Yeah, exactly. But you know what I love about the women's game is that when you watched that yesterday, the buildup is pretty quick. I mean, they're onto the net taking a shot within a few seconds. It's not quite the buildup in the men's game where they do a lot more. I mean, the girls, they were going back and forth. Germany would get a shot. USA would get a shot back and forth. It was really quick development. They move it fast.
They do. And how about that beautiful, and I will call her beautiful, Alex Morgan. She's been on our show before, by the way. She's gorgeous.
Wonderful. Yes, she is.
Not only is she gorgeous, she had some great opportunities. She is a super talent.
She is. She's got wheels. Yeah.
I mean, she gallops. I mean, she can outrun you, but also her moves are phenomenal.
Yep.
She missed, you know, didn't get a goal, but was responsible for charging down the middle, about to maybe take a shot or a pass when I guess there was a foul called, and the USA had a penalty kick. And who was it? As Lloyd, I believe.
Yeah, Lloyd. Yeah.
Made the kick. Very nice. She was highly focused.
Yeah, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, yeah, she buried that thing.
Yeah, and then the second goal by the USA.
Beautiful.
I think it was O'Hare or...
Yeah, who crossed it. I know that, but it was nice to see.
The pass was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the shot was ridiculously talented.
Well, it was nice to see Abby Wambach get in there and start that whole play.
She did start that whole play,
yeah, her,
and that, phenomenal. I was wondering when she'd come in. And nice substitutions.
Yep, yep.
Really
right,
good substitutions.
Right, right.
Just exciting. So is England and Japan today, I think?
I think it is, yeah. Then Sunday is the championship.
Who are you picking for Japan, England?
I think Japan's probably going to
run. Then we got a repeat.
Yeah.
We have a rerun, not a rerun, but definitely the same two players with the U.S. Really going to be anxious to get revenge on Japan. I thought they dominated Japan last time and still lost.
Yeah, they did.
Japan's very basic, very solid.
Yeah, they are. Yep, they do a technical game. Yeah.
So you know your soccer.
Yeah, I actually played all the way through college.
You did?
Yep, yep. And had we were lucky enough to be 11th and 12th in the nation my junior and senior year.
Wow.
That was NAIA, you know, so we played, you know, we play NCAA Division I teams and things like that, but we were in the NAIA, and it was amazing because the restrictions are less in the NAIA as far as foreign players. So, but in the school I was in, we had a few foreign players, but we were also in the North Country.
Wow.
So the full-time soccer guys, you know, when we got to the national tournaments, there was, you know, seven or eight different languages going on the field.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, and they were good, and they were real good.
So did you ever think of moving on to MLS?
Well, you know, a lot of, actually six of the players on my junior and senior team went pro.
Wow.
Yeah, they did. They went Jimmy DeRose, who he's the head coach of I'm trying to think of the school. It's in the Midwest, but yeah, he was our goalie. Mm-hmm. He went on and played MLS. A lot of them played.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of good players. Yep. So I do love that game, and the reason why I brought it all up, Dave, is when you're talking about financial planning, which is what I do, is it's you're not going to find the number one planner in the country. You know, so it's like sports, you know, it's a huge team. Like you're saying, the NBA, and, you know, you can't necessarily maybe name the king, you know, maybe it's Michael Jordan, maybe not. When you're searching for a financial planner, I think, you know, there's a lot of good questions you need to ask, and it's really a fit of personalities.
And that totally makes sense, almost in any profession. But I think, you know, people are a little leery. I mean, disclosing their, I would suspect, their financial, you know, secrets,
right,
or whatever,
right,
you want to call it.
So
they do have to feel comfortable and trust, almost like a CPA,
yep,
too, because we got to look into a lot of different things. So that totally makes sense. So you're right. It's not just one financial planner for everyone. It just depends on style, on risk tolerance. I mean, there's a lot of different things that go into that. So let's ask the question second. The second question will be, what do you need a good advisor, and how do you choose one? But let's go even more basic than that. What makes a good investment? Because after all, that's investing your money is, it's critical.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a great question. You know, there is a lot of mystery of, you know, of how somebody like an advisor like myself is able to channel people into investments, you know, because there are everybody has a past and a preconceived notion of different investments. And and like you said, it's very hard to, because we've all had mistakes, you know, over our lifetime investing with money.
And marriages. I successfully completed my marriage.
You did. And that's a hard thing to do. That might be harder than financial planning.
It can be more expensive.
Yeah, but the average person puts more time into finding car insurance than they do doing their financial planning every year.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's not
a good thing. You know, our job, you know, is to sit. It's a process where you sit down with people and ask open-end questions. And your question about what makes a good investment, you know, first you have to know the investor.
Right.
Yep. And you have to talk with them and find out those little things that, you know, I have a very dear client who invested in penny stocks. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, and he lost it.
Oh,
so you know that will make you quite prejudiced to the stock market.
And to the song Pennies from Heaven.
Yeah.
It would not be from heaven.
No, it wouldn't be. That would be.
Because it went somewhere.
No, that would be a scolding. All right, right there. Yeah, that's a burn that you don't walk away from without wounds.
Yeah.
And after 2008, unless you're 18, 19 years old right now as we speak, after 2008, you understand what a real beating is.
That's right.
Yeah, there were no rocks to hide under there.
That was brutal,
yep,
to say the least.
Yep, quite brutal. So, what makes a good investment more than anything is time.
Okay.
Yep, if time is on your side, you really don't have, it's funny because we were looking at the show before we started here and what we were going to talk about, and there's two phases of investing. There's, the accumulation phase, which is why when you're working, putting it all away, stashing your money, and hopefully that's a 30, 35-year time of accumulation.
Right.
And believe it or not, Dave, that's the easy side of investing.
Because of time. The time just sort of slips.
You got the time, and you're making the money, and you put it away. When you reach that pinnacle, and you're going down the other side, pretty much all of those investments are going to change. Not all of them. You're going to keep some, but you're talking distribution now instead of accumulation. So a good investment is if you've got time, the market, doesn't hit new highs because it's going backwards.
Right.
Over time, the market hits new highs, and it goes higher and it goes higher.
So you have to have patience and a long-term strategy.
Yep, patience, long-term strategy, and then when you get to know yourself as an investor, because we do a lot of poignant questions that try and pull out your idiosyncrasies, if I may say that, and your experiences, where you want to go, and how you want to get there, because everybody has two sides of your chart. You've got what you're making and what you're spending.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the people need an investor, in your opinion, or is it just, my guess, if I had to guess, I would say for the most part, yes. I would say the majority of people need a good advisor. And the reason I say that, and then we'll see if I have the right answer, is because people do what they do. I mean, they have their own profession.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a full-time job for a financial advisor to understand the market, to understand the whole dynamics, to understand everything there is about, wherever you're going to invest.
Right.
They're the expert. And would I just equate it to, if you needed surgery, would you go to a nurse or a surgeon?
Right, right.
So if you need some money advice, would you just go to the mailman? Nothing wrong with mailmen.
No.
Or female people.
Right. Female people.
Or whoever.
Male people.
But it's just that not their expertise. And it's a smart, wise person that knows how to find the good expert in that field.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Dave. You've got well, for me, living, eating, and breathing it every day, my job, and I've been through two severe recessions now, the dot-com bubble and that I was, in this business. So, I felt those, firsthand and got to look underneath, 2008. And when you're my job right now is just what you said, is really uncovering these investments. Yeah. Because the investment world is very big and people don't realize how many different choices there are out there and what's going on. Ever since 2008, even though it was a bloodbath, the companies that survived got a lot better. And I'm not talking, your banks or your AT&Ts. I'm talking the investment companies.
Yeah.
They had to get a lot better to survive. So, in my field, I look at lots of different investments, including real estate, stocks, commodities, you know, all different ways to invest. You can, you know, you can, you know, you could have invested into the U.S. dollar when we started quantitative easing, and it would, you know, it'd be really good, very good money. And now ETFs, are electronically traded funds, are really kind of neat tools.
You know, I got to say, real quickly, is that of all the financial planners I've ever met, and I've been in the business as a CPA for 30 years, you have such diversity. You know so much about so many things. A lot of financial people I know, you know, they know the stock market, but when you know, real estate, and you're talking about other, you know, vehicles.
Right, right.
To me, that's a huge advantage to be able to offer a menu and not just one dimension.
Yeah, you're right. There's there's definitely forming a portfolio for somebody. You know, if somebody comes in and they're 22 years old, and you know, they have $1 million to invest, that's a pretty easy game.
Yeah.
Because they've got a lot of time. You know.
Yeah.
So where you are on your time scale, what you've done so far, and you know, you can't actually entertain taking anybody for a client, because not everybody is fit to be a good investor.
Yeah.
Yep. So
now that's an interesting point. Not everyone's fit to be a good investor. And that's a really great question, is what makes a great investor then?
Yeah, that's a great question.
As you're talking about that, I'm trying to think, well, what's a great investor and what's a bad investor? Is someone, I'll take a shot at it, someone that's highly emotional might be a bad investor, and they react versus not then set a plan?
Well, that's, you hit the word that's probably the most dangerous word in investing, is emotions. That absolutely is the driver of most mistakes.
Isn't that interesting? Emotions are bad, or, you know, not conducive to investing, but they're highly conducive to marriage. What is up with that?
How
does that work? Okay, boy. I just thought I'd throw that.
My hat's always goes off to the people that are in their 30th anniversary or 35th anniversary.
Yeah.
I go, you two are amazing. You know, it's incredible.
It is. Or if you see someone, you know, 65 years marriage, it's got, wow.
Yeah.
Either you're a masochist, or you really figured it out.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do know someone like that.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I mean, I honor them. I go, are you kidding me?
It's amazing. It's amazing, Matt. You know, I love it. It happens less and less, unfortunately.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. Even though the lifespan goes up, the marriages go down.
Yeah, yeah. And that might be, there may be a you know, connection between the two.
And there is a connection between financial planning and marriage. And that's a whole different show. In fact, maybe we can do that in the next couple months.
Yeah.
A show on marriage and
finances,
how that affects marriages profoundly.
It's number one. It's the number
one question.
Number one cause.
I think this is a great maybe couple part series.
Yeah, it is. That's number one, and that's a really interesting thing to get into, because often if I'm interviewing new folks to be possible clients, you know, I always request that the husband and wife come together.
That makes sense.
Yep, they have to come in together.
And they're often not on the same page.
Right. Right, that's when I find out what's going on between the two of them. If it's open book share, you know, and everybody knows what's going on, which is
secret bank accounts.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't pry into that. Hopefully there won't, you know, there won't be any of those. That's up to you.
But I know what you mean. Over the years, I've had clients. The husband would call me, and the wife would call me. I go, no, let's not talk separately. First, I'm not a financial planner. I'm a CPA, but he does this, and he doesn't. You know, I think we should invest more. You know, and I go, well, you know, you got to get your risk tolerance. You got to come together, common goals.
Yeah.
Make a decision together. And, you know, and I'm not the person to talk to about it.
Right. Well, that's,
I mean, I appreciate you asking me if you know, you trust me, but.
Yeah. They're showing trust there. And that's a very good point. And I want to make sure that our listening public knows that, I am not a CPA or an attorney. I don't offer any law advice or any tax advice ever.
Right. Always, as a disclaimer, always seek out, if you hear anything on this show, any show, it doesn't matter, always check, you know, if it applies to your situation with your own professional financial advisor, CPA, attorney.
Yeah, yeah, and those are the three pillars right there. If you get that, if you get that team together, and actually that team talks to each other too.
Good team. Yeah.
Yep. Then you can. You don't want those guys on or gals, because there's lots of wonderful gals in this business now, and your business and attorneys. But you don't want them on islands. You know, you don't want your CPA and your financial planner never to talk, and your attorney never to mix in. You don't want those guys on islands. You want them to know each other.
Very, very critical, and there's no question. And that makes for a harmonious investment. So good. So we're talking about bad investors, good investors.
Right,
and
right.
So emotions is not a very conducive.
No. And there's a lot of things that are that go into this melting pot of your experiences. And I was fortunate in a lot of ways. My grandfather was one of the original. I call him a founder, but if it's a little bit. I'm giving myself a little leeway, but he was within the first 100 employees at General Electric. He ended up he ended up the CEO of the turbine division. So he was a great guy too. They called him Smiley.
And really?
Yeah, Clayton Coggeshall. Yep, Smiley. Clayton Smiley Coggeshall. He played the piano really well and smiled the whole time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. So,
and you remember him pretty well?
I never met him. He died 2 years before I was born.
Oh, what a shame.
Yep. But he left us all some General Electric stock. And I was a sophomore in college. And this was my very first huge lesson about money.
Yeah.
Was he left me the General Electric stock and... I talked to, it was actually my brother-in-law, at the time, and he gave me some good advice that it just, something sink into you. And that's when I knew it that being an advisor would really help people.
Yeah.
But he told me, he goes, don't sell your GE ever. So I learned about, what stocks were, and I was, 20 years old, sophomore in college, and never, I was like hoping I could afford a car when I got out because of student loans and all that stuff.
Sure.
So we got cash and we got stock. And I can tell you where the stock is right now, and this is 30 years later, but I can't tell you where that cash went.
Ah, good point.
Yeah, because you don't want to give somebody cash. You want to give them an asset that they will have to learn about to understand.
And will appreciate.
And will appreciate.
Cash in itself doesn't appreciate. It's what you do with the cash
right.
that could appreciate if it's invested in the right asset.
Right. So, I'll call myself ignorant to the capital markets when I received that. But when I got the stock, I was like, I better learn what's going on.
Yeah.
So I dug into it and I learned a lot about the markets and some neat, unique things that, like when Ben and Jerry's first went public, the ice cream company, for the first 30 days, only Vermont citizens could buy it. And I thought that was a really unique thing, so I bought it. I bought it in my account, and it was a really unique thing. When it went onto the market, it doubled within like a year.
Really?
Yep. So, Ben and Jerry's, they did really well. And there was a lot of unique things along the way along my life before I became professional. That I learned capital markets really well, so I do have a depth of knowledge, in the investment side, and I kind of pride myself on finding those that fit my clients. Let's get back to the advisor, Dave. Or I mean, in the investor.
Yeah.
What makes a good investor and what doesn't.
Yeah.
So if we were sitting down and I was interviewing you, we would start to pull out those things. It's about 4 or 5 meetings before we get to the point where I say, okay, I think, I can give you a financial plan to move forward on.
Yeah.
Because I really got to get to know a lot of stuff. The first one is the finding out your personality, your body language, what you're telling me, all this sort of stuff. And then the next one is a data gathering meeting. I'm going to ask you to bring in, everything that you have, your brokerage statements, your 2-year tax returns, it's just so I can see where you're at as far as
assets,
balance sheet,
houses,
yep,
property.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. In full, I get the CPA's name, the attorney's name, and I call them.
I got you.
Yep. And get in touch with them. And that's after I get permission, of course.
Sure.
The client's got to say, I'm with you. I'll take part and go on this ride with you.
And the CPA and attorney should not speak with you unless the client has given really written authorization.
Right. I have to. Yeah, you have to get it in writing.
But it's sort of funny. I've called people and, whether it's a former CPA, you know, it's a new client, and they're just chatting up, and I go, are you sure you want to do this? Don't you? I'm trying to help them out because they're breaching the code of ethics.
Oh, right.
You know, it's like, really? Don't you want permission?
Yeah.
And when people call me, if I, you know, oh, your client gave me the number, I go, let me call my client.
Right.
I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have any idea. Yeah, let me give them a call. Yeah, you have to.
Got to protect the privacy.
Yeah, you do, and especially in this day and age, you know, everything's, you have to be very, very careful. And that's, you know, that's part of the job that luckily we have a lot of, checks and balances in place for that. As far as, you know, so we go through four or five, maybe six meetings sometimes till we get to the point where we're actually making decisions.
So very thorough, but that's wise to be thorough because you don't want to miss a piece of the puzzle.
Right. Yeah.
That piece could be critical to making a decision to the left or the right.
And it also gives us, my mother was a school teacher, and she said, you know, if you're having any problems with a problem trying to figure it out, she goes, just give yourself time.
Yeah.
Don't grind on it. So those amount of meetings give us all time to come up with a lot of different questions that may not come out in just having one meeting.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So you start to, you know, you start to get, kind of pensive on the whole case. Like, we don't call them a case, and you start to pull out things, and it ends up being a better result when you put it all together. You know, because starting with, starting with poop, you end with poop.
Yeah. Or garbage in, garbage out.
Yep, exactly.
It's similar concept. Well, why don't we take a quick break and we'll get into some other questions. Really valuable. So, of course, you can always hear a replay of this show on breakradioshow.com under archive, under Money Help.
Look for Money Help.
That's right. Always look for Money Help, and we'll be right back. You know, the day destroys the night. And welcome back again. You are listening to Money Health live from the Regis Suites in Peoria, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside the star of Money Health, Conrad Kagashal, Arrowhead Wealth Management. We're having fun today. We're talking about what makes a good investor. We threw some soccer and even some marriage jokes were appropriate at times.
Slipped in a few here and there.
But, it's important that everyone, I always said everyone should have a professional on their side. I believe everyone should know an attorney. Everyone should know a CPA or have a CPA. And clearly financial advisor because you just don't know what you don't know, and how much better could you be at what you do, or financial-wise, if you had a professional and expert on your side?
Exactly, Dave. I couldn't agree more. Of course, I'm a little biased being a financial planner. And, I saw a great joke yesterday. It was a guy tried to sell me a coffin, but that's the last thing I need.
Hey, that is good.
Yes.
Yeah,
like so it's kind of like with financial planning, when you think about that, when you bring in the CPA and the attorney, you know, you are going to talk about those big end of the road things.
Yeah.
You know, you are going to talk about, you know, where do you want to go and how do you want your legacy to be remembered? You know, if you're going to have a legacy and whatever it may be, and those avenues that you can take. And I think we were, before
talking about a good and bad investor, we talked about bad. And so what's a good investor?
Yeah. Well, I want to give a story on a bad investor real quick. So, you know, and we talked a little bit about, you know, if you're going to bequest something or give something to your children or nieces, nephews, grandchildren, that an asset is always the thing to give. You don't give
cash.
That's
right.
You don't give cash.
Yep.
But, you know, they're never going to learn anything from cash.
But if you get GE stock, you might be in for something.
Right. You might be able to hold on to it and learn something before you do something foolish. So, So you, and that's what makes, you know, a good investor is somebody who is motivated to save, motivated to think about the future, motivated to take action. So when somebody comes in, and I've had a long career, so I've I took a gentleman that got a settlement from a death in the family, and he got a large settlement. Mm. So it was a referral from an existing client, and I took him in, and he was a young guy, and he was fairly difficult to read, but he followed my direction. So we made a relationship of sorts, but within 2 weeks he had asked for $200,000 out of a $700,000 account, and I said, this may not be so good. So I talked to him a little bit. I said, what do you plan on doing with the money? And, you know, to give him advice, if I could help him, you know, and say, you know, let's talk to a tax advisor before that, you know, right. so you can do this, you know, tax wise. Well, he bought three new Navigators when they were really hot. Remember in like 2005, they were like 80,000 a piece for those.
The cars?
Yep. The big, he bought his mom one, his girlfriend one, and himself one. And he decked them out where they were. And another additional $20,000.
So what did he tell you before he bought them?
Yeah. He told me, he said, I'm getting some vehicles.
And you said, you're what?
Yep. I said, wow. So that was, you know, so that was my first, but you know, before long, the account was down to 100 and I had to let him go. You know, I don't call it firing somebody, but I just said, you know, you're going the wrong way here and I can't stop you because I had multiple meetings with him.
Man.
And we talked about, you know, we talked about what it takes and the time and the value of time. And
no,
it was
deferred gratification. He just wanted
to spend. And it was a wonderful time to be, because he was young, you know, I was fairly aggressive with him and it was a wonderful time to be aggressive. It was right when the markets were cooking.
Yeah.
You know, 2004, 05, 06, 07, you know,
wow.
It was just cooking. So he was making, you know, very good money. He's just running right through it and he ran through it all. So there's a, you know, there's somebody that I can't help.
No. Yeah. And that's the psychology of this whole, you know, the factor of psychology. And that's probably a whole different show, too, is belief systems about money.
Right.
When you think of wealth, do you deserve it? What limits do you place on yourself? That'd be a good show, too.
Yeah, that'd be a really good show. And you can, the different niches or niches, however you say it, that are part of building up a good investor, you know, you could do, you know, weekend retreat and go all day long on, you know, on building the right core for yourself, you know, because there's a lot of things to be careful of, you know, debt is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody who's a good candidate for financial planning, most people, like you say, most people really are, because we separate the emotions from the investment for the investor.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah. We're kind of in between going, you know, I'm the guy you could call and go, do you believe the market's down 300 points today? And I can say, yes, I believe that. Yep.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's good reason for it. Here it is. And guess what? The daily ups and downs don't bother us at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
because you should be in for the long term.
Right.
If it's that type of investment, unless you're a day trader.
Right. If you're a day trader, yeah, well, then you better taking it short on that day.
Yeah.
But,
you got to stay on top of it every second.
Yeah. So, and that, you know, draws back to time. So a good investor has started fairly young. If you started late, then, you know, you really, you know, then the everything is kind of increased with the intensity of how much you need to save.
Yeah.
And how much you need to put away and really get your house in order. And getting your house in order is not an easy thing for an outsider to do either, because I can give you as much advice as possible. But if your habits are that you're a big spender and you've got to have the new this and the new that, and, you know, you spend more than you make, then you're certainly not a candidate. You've got to want to build up that wealth.
You know, I'm thinking as you're talking about what also may be a good investor and see if this makes sense to you. Is because, you know, people, you know, typically people get married and, you know, after you see it, after 20 years, they get divorced. After 30 years, mm-hmm. people getting divorced. A lot of people get in divorce long, you know, after many years.
Right.
So it would seem to me it's wise if you've been working with a financial advisor those years, you might have a tendency to, you know, preserve money despite a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Because things are in place where if you don't have one of the spouses may just clean you out.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, and community property state, like we're in here, you know, your own property is your own property.
Right.
So if it is a marriage that has gone all along, yeah, then both parties are probably at least, you know, 50-50. You know, they're
right.
Yeah, you know, and you have your quadros with your qualified accounts. You know, if it's a 401k or an IRA or something, it's going to be a split.
Right.
And those type of things. But you're right. You should, if you've been working or you're doing good on your own, that split should not crush both of you.
Right.
You know, it should actually, yes, you split up the assets, but if you were doing the things that will get you to the finish line, you know, I think we got a little crazy in the first half of this decade in the century, you know, 05, 06, when everybody thought their house was like an investment. And they were using it as an investment. And, you know, they were growing so fast and a lot of people would leverage them and buy more land or homes or another illiquid asset.
Yeah,
that you know, your home is, and we're also much more of a transient society.
Yeah.
So if you know, financial planning has to evolve with that. You know, the markets are much more quick; they move quickly. So there's certain characteristics, you know, that I see, that I read, like for instance, right now, the last few years, where mortgage rates have been down to the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, borrowing money is very, very cheap right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I see those things happening, and then real estate, you know, 2010 was very low. I mean, it was beat up. So when I see those things happen and I start to talk to my clients and say, you know, we should start looking at some real estate investment trusts, you know, because they're going to buy these properties at a real reasonable rate. They're going to borrow that money at 2-3%
and buy low.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, and, you know, I love to do the, I just draw a little time clock, and midnight being the most risk, I say, you know, where do you think real estate's at right now? You know, where do you think the equity market? And people are really good at saying, well, I just heard the equity market, which are stocks is what I'm talking about. I heard the capital markets are at all time highs. Right. So, you know, you might be close to midnight on the risk level.
Right.
You know, does it have further to go? Yeah, maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't.
Yeah.
But it's the risk is high right now, certainly. And if you're not picking individual stocks and buying the whole market, then you're taking on a lot of risk probably. So where's real estate along there? You know, they might say right now, well, it might be at 8 o'clock. You know, it's come back, but it hasn't come back, you know, to levels that where it was. You know, where's gold right now? You know, gold was close to $2,000 a, you know, an ounce, and now it's about $1,140 an ounce, I think. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so is there a lot of risk in gold? Well, you know, gold's one of those assets that are strictly to protect you. You know, you usually don't buy it to make money.
Right.
You buy it as a inflation hedge, and real estate can be a great inflation hedge too.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yep. So you got to read, you know, the markets change, the environment changes. You know, the Fed starts raising rates, then, you know, then the whole thing's going to change when that happens. So,
and that's why you need someone in your corner throughout life, in my opinion, to be able to have them call you, regular meetings. Just makes total sense to do that. So the other question then is how about how to choose a good advisor?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. I think I certainly suggest that people talk to usually more than one before they make their decision. Even three is not a bad idea. You want to ask the right questions. You want to ask their experiences, in their careers. And are they what are known as, you know, captive people, which are kind of agents for a certain specific companies, you know, you see them on every corner. I won't mention their names, but the big wirehouses generally, they are limited to what they're able to show you as an investment. And that can be, you know, that can be not, I won't call it a conflict of interest, but I would call it, you're not seeing the whole environment that's out there. So on the independent side, which I am, you know, I think on the whole, we have to work a little bit harder for our clients. We have to work a little bit harder to make sure we're providing value, because you don't have a big name that people are drawn to, and you don't see us advertised on TV, and you don't see all that sort of stuff. So the advertised companies, and it's kind of it goes throughout life. You know, they're big money companies,
yeah. And
you may not be getting all that you're looking for. It's nice to have an advisor that has a very large base of knowledge, whether it's
no question.
Yeah, I mean, because you know, I always tell my clients again that, you know, I never give tax advice or any legal advice. But I know enough to be dangerous in a lot of things and to point you in the right direction. You know, we can talk about, when they say, do I need a revocable trust, a living revocable trust? You know, and that's always a question that a lot of people want to know, if they need one or not. And if you look at your asset base right now, the what's called the unified exemption, mm-hmm. is $5 million per person. If you're married, you can have up to 10. Generally, you know, you're going to want a trust to take advantage of that entire 10 million, because you fund those trusts with your money, which means you just title your assets over to your unified exemption trust. So that's
revocable.
Which are revocable.
So that's a grantor living trust, in essence?
Yep, exactly. Yep, a grantor living trust, which you can, you know, which we call, you know, if you don't like it, you can go to the round file and dump it in the trash. It's revocable 100% until one of you die.
Then it's not revocable.
Right, right. And then it's irrevocable after that.
Right.
So you set that up the way you want it to, and how you want your, you know, your assets to be dispersed, that sort of thing. So the trust is always, you know, it's always a good question, and yeah. It always does help. I talked like when we had Jim Hyten on the show,
yeah.
a great estate attorney here in town. When we had him and I asked him that question, and he said, you know, it's really for the distribution of assets.
Yeah.
Yep. And of course, you know, the fear that there's going to be the state of all involved with your estate. You know, so if you do,
right,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah.
If you do have a sizable estate, you know, the old saying is, oh, don't worry if you don't have an estate plan. The state's got one for you.
That's right.
Yeah. So
and they do.
Yep. And they do. So, yeah. Do you want, you know, them in control or yourself in control? And that's what a trust really does. It gives you a lot of control.
Which is awesome. I mean, there's so many, you know, there's just so much information that people don't realize they don't even know.
Right.
And that's
right.
The scary part. But I think hopefully this show, you know, will educate people not only specifically, but to ask the question, you know, what is it I don't even have a clue about?
Right.
If you go around life asking that question, you're going to start finding out answers you never thought even existed.
You know, that's a great point, Dave. I think I had that epiphany or awakening in my 20s when, you know, I thought I was just getting over that phase of knowing everything. Mm. And I you know, and anytime you find an expert in their field or somebody really knowledgeable, whether it's a master electrician or whether it's a tax advisor or a CPA, you start talking to him, and then you go, wow, I'm really ignorant to all this stuff. I just really don't know what I don't know.
It's true. It's so complex, this world today. And guess what? It's getting more complex. I don't see anything getting simplified.
No.
They've talked
no.
about flat tax. Good luck on that.
Right.
That's just not going to happen with the special interest group. Every year the tax code gets more complex. CPAs even have trouble trying to figure this out.
Oh, I don't envy you guys at all the new rules that come out and what you have to. I mean, how big is the tax code right now? Is it something
it's
30,000 pages?
I can't. Yeah, I don't even know exactly how big, but it's not just the Internal Revenue Code. It's the volumes of regulations interpreting the code and the court cases and the private letter rulings. It's like a full-time business. It's beyond that. And it's actually, I'm the only CPA, I believe. I believe I may not know for sure that would vote for a flat tax.
Really?
I'm the only one, because I really think it's unfair.
The system?
I think it's just unfair when someone, even simple things, you know, people can't do their own return.
Right, right.
There's something wrong. And when CPAs have trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
That's even another problem, or tax attorneys having trouble, whatever. So that's my vote. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with you, because that would be, you know, a wonderful simplification of it all if we just flattened out. You know, I've heard so many different takes on that, but with your profession, I'm just really surprised that, you know, I hate to say this because everybody's going to send me hate mail, but that the prices don't go up every year, because you guys have to keep up on all this stuff and it gets more complex.
Well, I'm one of the few CPAs, I think, I haven't raised prices in a long time, because I feel bad for the clients and the people out there. Like,
right.
Just because the government keeps making it more complex, why should the people get hurt? But I know people, the price of tax returns skyrocket. And I'll tell you one thing, and maybe this is something that you can relate to also. If you price shop a professional,
right?
Yeah, believe me, you're going to get what you pay for.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe way more if you get audited.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, but how does that work with, you know, I know with CPAs, you know, they go, well, you know, you're $600 a return. I could get it for $400. I go, get it for $400. And then this happened, and then a year later or 2 years later, the guy gets audited. Mm-hmm. I didn't do his returns. He went for the $400.
Right, right.
And it cost him $5,000 for the audit. So I said, guess what? Your return cost you $5,400. I would have charged you $6,000. And that's true. People don't really understand. I feel bad because I know cost is an issue.
Right.
But financial planning prices, how do you do
No.
Is it a straight fee? Or?
It's a great question, because that's one of the things to select your advisor over.
Yeah.
You know, you when you say price shopping, you know, the truth is, you know, when you get what you pay for with professionals more than anything, you know, you're going to get.
Totally.
If you want to, you know, go to the low cost house or whatever it is, you know, you're going to get what you pay for.
No question.
Yeah. And this, you know, you have to have a very tight relationship with your clients when it's money. You know,
yeah.
I don't know what's, you know, more important to people than money. Hopefully their family is. But you know, money's second, or, you know, or edging
maybe
up.
Maybe there's family health or health and family. I don't know.
Right, right.
But in some circles, they say God, family, and let me think. God, family. What is the third
firearms?
One? Yeah, it might be. No, that's gold, ground, and guns.
Yeah.
Wait, what is the third one? God, family. No, I got it. I found, okay, God, marriage, and family.
Yeah.
I heard that.
Yeah, well, that's, nice. Yeah.
There's some interesting parts to that.
Yeah, because, I think, if you, you know, the people that have made that marriage thing focus on it, and they do well at that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, but the, you know, to go back to your question of fees, they vary dramatically throughout the business. And I say dramatically because the difference between charging 1% asset management fees, which is pretty, you know, pretty common, you know, throughout the industry, to somebody who's charging you 1.75 or 2% is it can be, and it's perfectly legal. And they do have to disclose that, and some people pay that.
Mm.
Often an advisor will take you on if you're willing to pay a little bit more if you have a smaller amount of assets. Because,
gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
Because we have to make money too.
Yeah.
So you know, you couldn't take, you know, let's say a small amount of assets and put the necessary time in to help that person if you're not going to charge them a little bit more.
So either if your base is not big enough, your percentage needs to go up a bit.
Right. The converse of that is if that's the right word anyway, the inverse of that is if you have you know, a large estate or a large investment, then
it could go down.
It should go down.
I got you. That's important to know for people.
Yep, it should go down. Like if you have a $5 million portfolio, you know, you should be clicking in around, you know, maybe 70 basis points, maybe even half a point.
Really?
Yeah, because you've got, you know, you have a large base, and I'm getting paid appropriately to stick on those assets all the time.
That's interesting. So,
So
when is a percentage of your asset what people are managing?
Right.
And how about, are there commissions, flat fees? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question, too, because this is a very important point. It's very important to FINRA, our governing body, and you can always go check out that advisor on FINRA.com. You know, whoever you're looking at, put their name in, and their what's called a U4 will come up, and that's their entire life history of you know, any criminal activity, any sort of industry wrongs, complaints will be on there.
Wow.
Yep, you go to FINRA.com, put in Conrad Coggeshall, and I'll come up.
Wow.
Yep, and you can look at me there. But, you know, there are, so there's different ways to buy stocks or mutual funds. There's A, B, and C shares of mutual funds, which I don't generally use. I really use very little of them, except in 529 plans. Those are college savings plans.
Yep.
I don't use them. I don't particularly like them that much. But, you know, if you're paying an A share, you want to be in that asset for longer than 6 years, 6 to 8 years, because you're paying the entire commission up front.
Gotcha. This is good stuff.
Yeah, which is usually about 5.95.
Gotcha.
5.95%, 5.95%. You're paying that up front, but after, you know, 6 years, you've kind of paid 1% a year, so to speak.
Right.
And the fees go away. So if in a 529 plan, they often do A shares because, you know, you've got 18 years before you're going to distribute.
Right. Makes sense.
So you get that paid off, and then there's no more fees for the next.
Interesting.
Yeah. For the next 12 years, you don't have fees, or 13 years or whatever. So that's, that's the way you want to do those. So there are reasons there are A shares. And then B shares and C shares. And C shares are a ongoing fee. So when somebody sells you a C share and says, I'm going to charge you 1.1% every year to manage your money, that's what they're doing. They're going to take 1% every year to manage it.
Interesting.
And then B shares is kind of a combination of the both.
Wow.
Yeah, so
this is stuff people need to know.
Yeah. It's buying, and then, you know, you have
flat fees.
Yep, and then you have L shares, which are institutional shares.
Oh.
Yep, which usually takes a higher dollar amount in the beginning, but very low fees. Yep.
Gotcha.
Yep, institutional money is usually, you know, very low money. And luckily, you know, our technologies have come full circle where, you know, I can offer institutional shares to my clients, and it depends on what fits them best.
Right.
You know, inside inside a 529, or maybe you've got, you know, maybe you have an irrevocable trust. You know, maybe you have a charitable remainder trust, or what's called in your business a split interest trust.
Right.
Yeah,
I had a client that had that.
Yep. So that, you know, that split interest trust is, you know, what I suggest with my other advisors that come into the room is for the end of the road on those 1031s.
Yeah.
You know, because you keep on 1031ing, which for anybody who doesn't know, it's a property exchange.
Right.
You can business for investment or business. Right. You can defer your taxes, right, for infinite until your day is done, until you actually buy that coffin that somebody's offering. But that's the last thing you need. So so the charitable remainder trust is one way to knock that tax out, because you can sell an asset, you transfer it over to the trust, sell it inside there, and it's tax free.
Wow.
No matter what the tax was on it, if it's a recapture or if it's, you know, capital gain, short term gain, whatever it is, you can do that at the end of the 1031 cycle. There's different trusts. So how would you fund that? Well, you know, with those sort of trusts, you get income from them every year.
Yeah.
They're like your own private little retirement plan.
So the income you get, you can't touch the principal.
You can't touch the principal.
Which is called corpus?
Which is called corpus, right?
Wow, how do I know that?
Yeah, you can do it two ways. You can do an annuity trust.
Okay, gotcha.
Or a uni trust. And the annuity trust will pay you a certain amount every year no matter what. So it can pay you principal.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yep, the uni trust is going to be strictly whatever the trust makes. It's going to pay that. So you never do go into the corpus or principal.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yep. So there's two ways that those work. And then, you know, you select, it depends on your age. If you're not in your 40s, you're not going to be eligible for one of those trusts. It just doesn't work anymore to do that. They change the regs a little bit. But, you know, inside of there, what do you do? You know, what do you fund it with? And so there's special circumstances for using, you know, different kinds of assets. Of course, you know, in your business, I always ask you about UBTI and those trusts and things like that, unrelated business income tax, because that's your field.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know anything about those things, but I got to call you guys up and go, hey, Dave, does an apartment building throw off UBTI? Because it'll disqualify our trust, you know, things like that.
There's a lot of, it's so complex, people need, there's no doubt. The bottom line is, as we're wrapping up the show here, is that there's so many complexities that you got to have someone not only that you trust,
right,
but knows. And I got to tell you, as a former auditor, I met a lot of CPAs that did not know. And I'm sure in the field, your field, financial planning, there's many that just don't have the depth of your knowledge. And it's so worth it going to someone like you, Conrad.
Well, thanks, Dave. Yeah, I think there's a huge difference in the field. You have good doctors. You have doctors that, you know, maybe they just scraped on through and they're not really passionate about their business. I love to see somebody that has passion about their business.
Yeah.
I know immediately that I'm looking at somebody who's going to be successful.
No doubt.
When they come in and, you know, every day's a new day and they take it with passion and they leave their personal stuff at the house and walk into the office and, you know, light it up and get at it.
And they have the proper criteria, what makes them a good financial planner, CPA attorney, which is serving their client and making sure that their product and what they give in advice is top notch.
Right.
Some people have criteria, just get the thing out, and if I can get it off my desk, that's their criteria of success, and that is not very well, that's just not a great criteria, I don't think.
Right,
It's can you give the top-notch advice and really improve the client situation? I guess we're out of time. Can you believe it? How do people get in touch with you, Conrad?
Well, they can call me here at the office, you know, which is 623-888-3210, Arrowhead Wealth Management. They can also, although I'm just under construction right now, you can go to my website. It should be up and live here in the next day or two. And I'm also at Conrad@ArrowheadWealthManagement.com.
Excellent.
Yep, for an email. And I'd love to hear from anybody who has questions. And I do pro bono questions over the phone. I'll give you, you know, whatever I can tell you. And you can come on in if you want to.
That is perfect. So we'll have another show, of course. So I was the first Wednesday of each month at 11 a.m. So we'll be seeing you the first Wednesday of the month. I'm not sure what day that is next, in August.
Yeah, I guess it's August already.
It will be August, but we'll have another good time. And we'll be doing some stuff off there, right?
We're
going to do seminars together.
Yeah, we'll get
workshop.
Some seminars going.
Yeah,
and workshops. It was great talking with you today, Dave. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Conrad. And that wraps up another episode of Money Health. Remember, you can hear a replay of this at BreakRadioShow.com under archive. Go to Money Health and hear all the great words Conrad has to say.
We'll see you next month.
Next month.